8:15 having arrived, I'm going to call the Education Finance Committee to order and welcome everyone. Hopefully you had a nice, relaxing break. One thing I noticed when I got back here in the town is almost all of the snow is gone. When back home, there's still about 3 feet of snow sitting around, ready to melt yet. So it's
global warming.
It must be, but I noticed it was all gone down here. So with that, we're going to have Ms. Larson, if you would, go through. We have the policy bill, House File 1151, and someone want to move that for possible inclusion? Representative Morgan moves House File 1151 for possible to be laid over for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. All right, Ms. Larson, if you would kind of take us through it, and then we'll go from there.
Mr. Chairman, members, this is the K-12 Education Policy Bill, House File 1151, the first engrossment. There are five articles in this bill. The first article has to do with student accountability. It is primarily a combination of corrections from the Department of Education, which was House File 1151. A bill Representative Reinert proposed on changing the statewide assessment system, contribution from Representative Erdahl on Career and Technical Education Task Force. I'll go through these sections momentarily. I just wanted to review the provide an overview. Section 2 has to do with educators. It primarily concerns licensure for teachers and also implicates administrators. Article 3 has to do with school programs and operations. It addresses everything from the school calendar to integration revenue. Article 4 concerns charter schools. It is an amalgam both of changes proposed by the department as well as individual bills from legislators. Article 5 is special education. It is almost entirely composed of proposals from the department with a bill on restrictive procedures from Representative Dabney. And then Article 6 is one section having to do with early childhood, and that was also a department proposal. As to Section 1 on student accountability, the first section has to do with definitions. It was proposed by the department. My understanding is it was essentially designed for cleanup. A few changes were made to correspond to proposals for changes in assessment. Section 2 has to do with educational expectations and graduation requirements. Again, this is language proposed by the department to clean up and better organize the chapter on graduation requirements. Sections 3 and 4 also were proposed by the department, again, as cleanup and better organization of the chapter, as was Section 5. Section 6 begins language proposed by Representative Reinert. This would require school districts beginning no later than the 2013-2014 school year to help all students by no later than grade 9 to explore college and career interests and develop a transition plan to post-secondary education or employment. Many districts are already participating in this effort on a voluntary basis. Section 7, again from Representative Reinert's bill, would allow students who enter grade 9 before the 2013-2014 school year who have not demonstrated proficiency on the MCAs, the grad tests, or even the basic skills test to satisfy high school graduation requirements by taking the ACT assessment for college admission before graduating from high school. There is a direction for the state to pay test costs for districts. This would be effective immediately and applicable through the 2015-2016 school year. Section 8 is from a proposal from the department. It pertains to gifted and talented students. There is a direction to school districts to adopt guidelines for assessing and identifying eligible students and also to adopt procedures for early admission to children in kindergarten or first grade. Section 9 has to do with mental health education. It encourages rather than requires districts and charter schools to provide mental health instruction to students in grades 6 to 12, aligned with local health standards. Section 10 is from Representative Brinert's bill. There are considerable changes in this particular section. First off, there is a direction to, the Education Commissioner to make computer adaptive reading and math assessments available to students in grades 3 through 7. This would be part of Minnesota's comprehensive assessment system. It also requires students who fail to pass a basic skills test and students in their senior year who haven't demonstrated proficiency to take a college admissions assessment that supports career and college readiness standards for all. Paragraph C in Section 10 makes students in grades 8 in the 2012-2013 school year and later subject to state graduation requirements that would be based on a longitudinal systemic approach to student education and career planning, assessment, instructional support, and evaluation. In order to graduate from high school, students would be required to attain required academic standards and career and college readiness benchmarks as they are demonstrated on a nationally normed college entrance exam. Secondly, to take achievement and college and career readiness tests in math, reading, and writing so that their progress can be monitored as well as their growth and required knowledge and skills, their progress and performance can be analyzed, their strengths can be identified, areas where they require assistance can be diagnosed, so that curriculum or instruction adjustments can be made, targeted interventions can be provided, or remediation. Also, based on students' progress and performance data, there is a requirement to determine students' learning and instructional needs and instructional tools and the best practices that would support academic rigor for those students. Furthermore, there is a requirement to engage students in age-appropriate exploration and planning activities and career assessments to identify personally relevant career interests and aptitudes and help students and their family develop a transitional plan for post-secondary education or employment. There is an expectation on the for schools, districts, and the state for both career and college readiness to be comparable in rigor, clarity of purpose, and rates of student completion. A student who requires it is eligible to receive targeted, relevant, academically rigorous, and resourced instruction. This could be targeted instruction. It could involve an intervention plan. The point is to help the student improve the student's knowledge and skills in core subjects so the student has a reasonable chance to succeed without need for post-secondary remediation. Schools and districts are to actively encourage a student in grade 11 or 12 who is identified as academically ready for a career or college to participate in courses and programs that award college credit to high school students. There is a direction to the Education Commissioner after consulting with the Minsky Chancellor and using an RFP to contract for a series of assessments consistent with this section that are aligned with state academic standards and include college and career benchmarks. Math, reading, and writing assessments must be for students in grades 8 and 10 and 11 or 12. They must be predictive of and nationally normed for career and college readiness, nationally recognized as a college entrance exam, include a college placement diagnostic exam, and contain career exploration elements. The Commissioner of Education and the Minsky Chancellor are to collaborate and aligning instruction and assessments for adult basic education students in order to provide these students with diagnostic information about targeted interventions that the students need so that they may seek post-secondary education or employment without need for remediation. There is a direction that districts and schools annually use career exploration elements in the assessment to help students beginning no later than grade 9 and their families explore and plan for post-secondary education or careers based on those students' interests, aptitudes, and aspirations. Districts and schools must use timely regional labor market information, partnerships, and other resources to help the students and their families develop and pursue an individualized plan for post-secondary education or a career. This is intended to help all students pursue their interests and career goals, increase their engagement in and connection to school, improve their knowledge in school and skills, deepen their understanding of career pathways that would lead to an industry-recognized credential, an associate degree, or a BA degree. Students whose growth and academic achievement between grades 8 and 10 who show adequate progress toward meeting state career and college readiness standards are to be given a college entrance exam in grade 11.
Ms. Larson?
Yes.
I think I'm going to have, most of us have already kind of been through this, and I appreciate the detail, but I don't know if we need that. And so if maybe we can just, I'd like to get through this maybe in about 10 minutes at max for the remainder. And so maybe, and Representative Woodard, I mean, I think we're okay. I mean, I appreciate this, but I don't know if we need to go through in such detail. So if we can just kind of hit the highlights and we'll go from there. So thank you. Or maybe, or Representative Mariani, do you want to?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My apologies to you and to the members. I've had a rough start this morning. And my apologies to you, Ms. Larson, because obviously it then precipitated having you go through the bill when I was just going to basically do what you suggested.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Larson. Representative Mariani, how do you want to?
Mr. Proceed? Chair, I'll just do a few highlights very quickly, if that's okay.
Okay, very good.
Probably you want a conversation with the
very good.
Committee, right?
All right, thank you.
Well, first of all, it's my pleasure to bring you the omnibus policy bill from our our policy committee. It was a great committee. It is a great committee. Mr. Chair, you served on it, and one of the things I think you'll share is that it's a committee that pretty much thinks for itself. You and I have both had provisions that were defeated. And so you have the finance chair and the policy chair, you know, can't even get their own pieces passed, you know, in a bipartisan manner, but we totally respect it, the wishes of the committee, and I totally respect your presence on that committee and sharing those values with me. Representative Erickson has provided very sound, sage advice. She chaired that committee in the last couple of years, and her presence is very helpful in terms of providing information many of us didn't have. Representative Wills also serves on the committee, and Mr. Chair, she saved us just like she saved you a few times by catching some poorly worded provisions that we had in committee, and so I suspect she's probably plowing through the bill right now, finding some pieces where I might have flubbed. And then Representative Morgan and Dabney have also served on the committee. I'm trying to think who else. I think that's it. You and me, then, Mr. Chair. The bill is divided into six articles. Ms. Larson went through, I believe, a good chunk of that. We divided the bill up into a student accountability system, and this is primarily the work of Representative Reiner that flows out of a year-long process of task force work at the Department of Ed, looking at the starting by looking at the grad high-stakes test, and then branching out to just ask, you know, fundamentally important questions about student assessment and what role should student assessments play in our design of our education system. We had a lot of, quite frankly, bipartisan angst and concern over the Minnesota teacher licensure exam. We heard some pretty, at times, emotional testimony from teacher candidates from across the state who have struggled with portions of the skills exam. Some wonderful educators who showed up with their principals and superintendents and other administrators who said, boy, you know, these are some really terrific young folks in our classrooms, but for whatever reason, they just can't get through that, you know, that skills exam, and under our laws, we're about to lose them permanently from teaching. A big, big issue in rural Minnesota where a good chunk of our candidates tend to come from out of state, and making it even that much more difficult to be able to align their knowledge and expertise with a skills exam that's really tied to how teacher prep programs prepare teachers in the state of Minnesota. Also, a number of specialized teaching fields, especially immersion education, where we're often accessing individuals from other nations, quite frankly, to teach second languages, also struggling with those exams, and at the point where some of these programs may very well shut down because the pull just isn't there to be able to staff those positions. You all heard the integration bill a few weeks ago. We re-embedded it here in the omnibus bill. It's the same language. We didn't change anything from that. There's a chapter, or rather an article here on charter schools, mostly an amalgamation of the department's recommendations and recommendations from the different charter school associations, mostly basically just good housekeeping, you know, quality assurance language, things like, you know, addressing conflicts of interest, you know, on the boards of charter schools, relationships between charter schools and their authorizers, some lease issues as well in terms of conflict of interest. There's a small special ed section, and then there's also a very small early childhood section. As you know, we have an early childhood committee, and so my committee didn't spend a whole lot of time on early childhood issues. However, you, Mr. Chair, do have the early childhood, or at least the education part of early childhood accounts, and so you're receiving information from the recommendations Representative Mullery's committee, I suspect, on early childhood issues, as well as the little piece that we have before you. There are, you know, a few little gems here and there. As you know, we began the year with a real concern around mental health issues just because of the way the year started for Americans this year. And so there's not big pieces, but small pieces here that have to do with trying to enhance the ability and the knowledge of students and of instructors around mental illness. That will be coupled, no doubt, later on when the chair perhaps brings up some issues related to the Safe Schools Levy to be able to continue to address that issue. I'm just trying to, Mr. Chair, very quickly, I think I pretty much, I mean, they're like I said, I should say this because it's always controversial, but, you know, we do have a Labor Start bill, Labor Start language in the bill. Basically, many of you know Minnesota is one of only three states in the nation that has a prohibition on the start of K-12 public schools prior to Labor Day. We get rid of that except for a provision that Thursday and Friday immediately preceding Labor Day, schools shall not start prior to that. But, you know, this is a longstanding issue, and I certainly didn't want to hide it or embed it here, make sure the members are aware that is in there. Mr. Chair, I'll stop. It's probably best just to field questions. I will invite our Vice Chair, Representative Breiner, to join in answering questions particularly related to our student assessments work. It's a major feature of this bill. It's a big shift and a big change. We're basically replacing the high-stakes grad test with a comprehensive approach that's centered on each student's talents and aspirations, and it'll provide a series of career and college readiness assessments over time that give students in real time ongoing diagnostic information that's tied to their aspiration, and so it empowers them to plan and to do so early for post-secondary and for also career success. Meanwhile, students will continue to participate in the MCA battery of exams, which of course are tied to our state standards. So the committee may want to spend some time, diving a little bit into those questions. Mr. Chair, I'll stop there. And I know there's some amendments. I've got two that I'll be offering.
Thank you very much, Representative Mariano. Thank you for your very thoughtful approach to this policy bill. Appreciate that very much. And Representative Reinert, would you going to join the author at the table? And do you have any testifiers at this time?
Mr. Chair, I don't, although there are people here in the audience that I think will be available for questions. The department is here. We worked off of the department's technical policy bill, and so there's provisions embedded here and there that really come from the department, and they're in better position to answer those questions.
Well, I think what we'll do right now is take testifiers first, and then no one's on the questions right now. So if there's anyone here that would like to speak for or against House File 1151, if you could, Representative Breiner.
Mr. Chair, I have a few people available, but I didn't know if you wanted to hold them for questions from members with hands-on experience with the actual assessment system we're proposing here. From Irondale, we have their assessment director and their superintendent, and then we have a Minsky representative who can speak to the alignment issues, but I didn't know if you wanted to take those testifiers at this point.
We, Representative Breiner, thank you. Let's hold off on that. I think we'll probably get some questions. So we'll hold off on those testifiers, but anyone else at this time that would care to testify for or against 1151, if you'd come forward and introduce yourself for the record. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Amy Mace, and I am an attorney from the law firm of Rupp Anderson Squires and Waldsberger. I have been representing schools for approximately 15 years, and I have been asked by Friends of Education, which is an authorizer for charter schools, to address a very just one line in the bill that you have before you, and I will direct you to where that is. It is on page 63. And it is lines 63.18 and 63.19. Our law firm represents over 100 educational entities, mainly consisting of independent school districts and charter schools in Minnesota. We routinely advise our clients in regards to the open meeting law, which is the subject of this provision. And I also regularly provide charter school board training to charter board members as required by the law. One of the areas that I provide training is in board governance, which includes advising charter school board members of what is required to comply with the open meeting law. The reason that I am testifying today is that this provision in the bill, I believe, would have the effect of overturning how the law has applied to committee meetings for over 20 years. And in particular, it would only affect charter schools and would not affect the other public bodies such as cities, independent school districts, and counties that are governed by the open meeting law. Now, if you looked at the text of the open meeting law itself, you will see that it includes committees. However, the Minnesota Court of Appeals has interpreted what it means to be a committee for purposes of the open meeting law. There is a case entitled Sovereign v. Dunn, which was decided approximately 20 years ago, in which the issue was whether public officials' meetings of less than a quorum, mm-hmm. so in that case it was just one city council member and a mayor, constituted a committee for purposes of open meeting law, thus meaning they would have to comply with all of the notice requirements and having meetings open to the public. In that case, the mayor and the council member were trying to negotiate an agreement related to an annexation issue. And the Court of Appeals analyzed carefully what the purpose was of including committee in the open meeting law. And they said that the legislature's intent was that they did not want governing bodies to be able to excuse themselves into executive sessions and then not be conducting business in the public. They determined, however, that it was not the intent for the open meeting law to apply to gatherings of public officials that were incapable of making decisions. And so, for example, in that sovereign case, the mayor and the city council member had no authority to make a decision on the annexation issue. Rather, they would have brought, and they did bring back, a recommendation to the full council to take action, to deliberate in public, to have the proposed agreement available to the public, and in that case, the council voted it down. So the outcome of the sovereign case is that committee meetings are only subject to the open meeting law if the committee consists of more than a quorum of the governing body, because in that case it's presumed that they have decision-making authority, there's enough of them to make a decision on behalf of the body, or if the council or the school board has specifically delegated decision-making authority to the committee. Otherwise, the committee does not have power to make decisions, and thus the court found they were not subject to the open meeting law. And I'll give you a practical implication as to how this arises for some of our independent school district clients and our charter school clients. Many school districts have finance committees, personnel committees, other committees that are not subject to the open meeting law because they don't ultimately have decision-making powers or consist of more than a quorum of the board. And one real-life example for charter schools is that most charter schools are involved in leases. They lease their buildings from landlords. And so they will appoint a facilities committee to negotiate with the landlord to come to some recommended terms and rent that they can then recommend to the full board at a public meeting where it's deliberated and decided upon. And in that situation, a charter school would really be disadvantaged if they had to debate in a public meeting early on in the process as to what their bottom line might be in trying to negotiate with a landlord, if the landlord could sit in the audience at every public meeting that the charter school had and listen to, you know, the comments of the board members. It is also not very efficient in that situation if you're going to be having multiple meetings with landlord to negotiate a contract, to be having public meeting after public meeting that requires notice. So that's just one real life example, and there are many others that independent school districts and charter schools use committees for. Now, I'm not here to suggest that the sovereign be done principle should go away. I think that is a good standard. Again, it's been in place for 20 years. My point is I don't think there's a reason for it to be changed. And my concern is that by adopting the language that says board committee meetings must comply with Chapter 13D, which is the open meeting law, that you will unintentionally be taking away the exceptions articulated in Sovereign Be Done for only one public entity, which is charter schools. And in my opinion, there's no rationale for why the same, you know, principle that governs committee meetings should not apply to both charter schools, independent school districts, cities, counties. And so that is my concern.
Okay. I think we've got the point.
Can I make one final comment?
Okay, yes.
It's my understanding that the Friends of Education has proposed to the committee chair's assistants just a very simple tweak in this language, okay, which I think would fix the problem, which is that you could simply say board of directors are public bodies subject to Chapter 13D, which would make it very clear that charter schools are subject to the open meeting law, and similarly, their committee meetings are subject to the open meeting law the same as all other public bodies.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time today.
Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, this will be the second time I have to apologize to the committee. This issue was brought to me several weeks ago, and I had meant to pursue it because I was concerned with the legal issues that were raised, but I didn't pursue it. I think Ms. Mace brings some very important issues here. I've spoken with the MACS representative this is not something that that they feel that they need to continue to push all the way through. I think if the committee feels concerned about it, we can certainly back out of this. And so the author is more than open to either adopting the language change in Ms. May's suggested or just simply strike that provision. And, perhaps we can do that later when we can back out. Yeah.
Okay. Representative Van Zelt, you had a question? Comment?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Listening to that testimony, transparency and participation in this process here are extremely important in guiding the committee and getting our work done. But I think it would be really useful and instructive if your policy going forward would require testifiers who come before the committee, tell us who they are, tell us they're with some law firm someplace. I think they should be required to tell us who their clients are and why they're here and where those clients are located, so that the committee can listen to that testimony and become better informed in terms of making the judgments that are going to have to be made from now until the end here. Simply to come before the committee on behalf of some law firm or some company or the Chamber of Commerce or the Business Partnership or somebody, is not enough for me. I like to know just who it is that the testifiers are speaking on behalf of. So with all due respect to the rules around here, I'd like you to consider that.
Thank you, Representative Ansel. And I do think Ms. Mace did say she was on behalf of the Friends of Education and that she had worked with charter schools and representing charter schools. I don't know if she'd have to go to individual ones, but I do think she was very upfront with
Folks
she was representing.
Mr. Chair, that's not enough for me. That's not enough. I would respectfully request, with full transparency and disclosure, more accurate and in-depth information as to who it is getting representation in front of this committee, as opposed to those who have a stake in this committee's work, who don't get quite as much opportunity to participate and function as citizens in this committee process. So please consider my advice.
Certainly will, Representative Van Zelt. And I do think if we had all the lobbyists do that, we may not have time for testimony. At least at each and every. I mean, it's, so I don't think it's just one person. I mean, we could go and if they had to say all of their clients, it could be quite extensive and actually get into some areas we may not want to get into. But I understand what you're saying, Representative.
Well, frankly, Mr. Chair, some discretion on the part of the chair would, but it just strikes me that we ought to know a little bit more about these people who are coming here and presenting information, presenting what they believe is factual data as opposed to anecdotal information, that kind of thing. And I would hope that going forward that you would help the committee members out a little bit by helping us understand who these people are.
Any other testifiers for or against?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Sue Abderholden with NAMI Minnesota, also a parent of a child who had depression and anxiety when she was in school. Because Representative Mariani brought it up in terms of, you know, we started off this legislative session with a lot of interest and a lot of desire to actually do something for children who experience mental illnesses and to try to fix the children's mental health system, do more collaboration between education and human services. I just want to say that your committee may be the only one that actually can do anything about the children's mental health system and about kids with mental illness. The human service targets very likely will mean there will be no increases in the school-linked mental health program, which everyone knows has really been very effective in helping kids. So I just wanted to remind you that what's in this bill may be the only thing that will actually help kids with mental illness this session. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to testify for or against House File 1151? Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Karen Ballmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. Just wanted to put on the record just a concern that we've got. We have been working closely with the Education Policy Committee and Representative Urusso in particular around the basic skills testing language that you have before you in this bill. And the Board of Teaching has certainly identified some targeted areas for work. Some of those areas do need legislative action and support, and so we are very happy that you have taken this up and that you are willing to engage in these. And there are a number of other issues that we have within the board's authority. We do have the opportunity and an obligation to continue working on as a board and with that purview. And so we are continuing to work on some of the concerns that you have been made aware of, that we have also been made aware of. I did want to just note, again for the record, that in this the bill language that you have before you, there's a sunset provision for the basic skills test, and we're concerned about that. There's a sort of fundamental philosophical dialogue that we could have, and then the one I'll just focus on here, though, is really more on the implementation, and that the timeline set forth in this bill is one that is concerning. If we are to have recommendations back to the legislature February 1, about a year from now in 2014, and we should note too that the board is beginning this work. We have been doing this, but the types of work that the task force language calls for is already underway in many of these areas. But if we should have a task force, then we're happy to do that work. The recommendations would come to you February 1, 2014. We would assume, and it maybe it's not a proper assumption, that we would not know the legislative direction as a result of those recommendations until May mm-hmm. of 2014, and then the sunset takes effect September 1 of 2014. That's a very short turnaround time, not knowing what those recommendations would be. There are a whole host of things that could come as a result of that task force work and those recommendations. Anything, not much would change. And if so, then it would be pretty simple. But if there was redevelopment work, if there was to be a bidding process and a request for proposal process, that turnaround time is pretty tough. So we offer that as some of the implementation concerns. Beyond that, we do have concerns around introducing some irregularities and complexities into the licensing process. As we know, for example, that the heaviest licensing time as college graduates are completing and applying for licenses, predominantly May and June, they will sit in sort of a window of kind of unknown time. And so there are a host of things that we would just like to, for the record, put on the table as concerns. These are the sort of practical implementation concerns, but we do also have some more philosophical questions and concerns about that sunset as well in terms of whether it's necessary, and I don't know if it's appropriate for this committee to take that up or not. There has been a lot of dialogue in the policy committee, but just wanted to at least put that out for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Ballmer. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, and just so very quickly so that members know, so we're doing several pieces in the MTLE area. One is we're reinstating the board's permission to issue up to 3 temporary 1-year licenses for candidates who haven't passed the skills exam but did pass the teacher prep program. That was sort of the regimen that we had before, so a few years ago, and then we kind of drew a hard line in the last couple of years on that issue. And there were certainly issues with the NPLE prior to that, but that, at least in testimony, that seemed to have triggered perhaps kind of a new level of crisis, if you will. So it's one thing that we do. We also have districts, and this is permissive language, where districts may provide remedial assistance for candidates who didn't pass their skills exam. We also continue and make stronger the Board of Teaching's requirement that our teacher prep programs make available remedial assistance to those candidates. And then, of course, we do have the 2014 sunset of the requirement to pass the skills exam before the board grants an initial license. That was a topic of much debate in our committee, and we kind of had some tough votes on that issue. Of course, the expectation is that, and it's good to know that the Board of Teaching is already in the process, has already been in the process of looking deeply at this particular assessment approach. But the expectation, of course, is that the task force would come back with strong recommendations for a better way, if you will, to have candidates demonstrate mastery in these skills. I think Ms. Balmer's advice about the timing issues are things that we, in fact, should very carefully continue to think about. It's important that we do get this right, and it's important also that we don't wind up creating sort of a bureaucratic nightmare for both the teacher candidates and for the Board of Teaching and the Department of Ed. So I'll continue to work on that if it's the desire of this committee to continue to move forward in this direction. I'm not insensitive to that at all.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Balmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anyone else care to testify for or against House File 1151? Okay, seeing none, members open for questions. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did actually have a question for Ms. Balmer.
Oh. Okay, Ms. Balmer, if you would.
That's my first question. Sorry about that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Balmer, some of our colleges require the basic skills testing as the student enters the program. Would that continue regardless of a change in law?
Ms. Balmer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, in Board of Teaching rule, which of course we have a number of rules that that flesh out the testing requirements and so forth. And one of the provisions in the rule governing testing is that teacher candidates must attempt.
Members, yes. This audience, someone has a cell phone operating here. Very good. Ms. Balmer, continue.
Okay. So in our rules, yes. I promise I'm not. We need a metal detector on the way in. There is a provision in our rule that they must attempt before they begin their teaching preparation program.
Thank you, Ms. Balmer. Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I would like the
I don't know. For sure. I'm sorry. What? Someone has a cell phone next to them. I don't know. All right. I never really can ever figure this out for sure. Representative Erickson, do you have another question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for the department, and I'm not sure. It's on Section 10 of Article 1, the statewide testing, so perhaps Ms. Dugan would be the one to answer. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Corte, I guess you need to identify yourself first.
go ahead. Okay, you have the, you know, Mr. Cordy, you know the question. You can identify yourself. No,
Mr. Chair, members, Darren Cordy from the Minnesota Department of Education. No, I was just flipping to that section, and I have it here now. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Corte, on line 12.8, would you comment on what longitudinal data in this systematic approach to student education and career planning assessment will be used? What's the longitudinal data that will be collected and used? Beginning, well, it's already in place, but we're adding longitudinal data, so I want to know what's going to be used, what information will be collected.
Mr. Cordy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I would ask our testing director, Jennifer Dugan, to come up here and perhaps shed some light on that. And also, I know Karen Hynek from Ms. Hugh is here, and she may be able to shed some light on that as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That would be perfect.
Ms. Dugan, if you would introduce yourself.
Hi, Jennifer Dugan, Assessment Director at the Minnesota Department of Education. And the longitudinal data, so we have data at the department for students that chose to take the ACT. And so we would have that longitudinal data. We also have longitudinal data for Explore and Plan through the EPASS system that is funded as part of the legislative process. So we would have that historical data, and then we would have all of their career planning information. And now we would have statewide data as well for the entire population for looking at an 8th grade, a 10th grade assessment, and then a college placement exam as part of the RFP process.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Dugan, in the longitudinal data collection site, mm-hmm. you are looking at the sections of the Plan and Explore as well as the ACT to encourage or require the child to then pursue that career. Is that correct?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you, Chair. So we have in the state longitudinal database, we not only have their EPASS and ACT information, but we also have what their, because it's collaborating with higher education and DEED, so we have looking at what they do in post-secondary as well. So all of that information is in the longitudinal database. By putting in place a statewide assessment system described in this bill, then we would have statewide data of all students participating in an 8th grade assessment with career planning, a 10th grade assessment with career planning, and then a college entrance exam, which we don't currently have. It's a selective process.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
So this longitudinal data system is up and running?
We are in the process of putting all of the data in place. It is close.
Because, Mr. Chair, I think they're a little behind schedule. I think they got the money quite a while ago, and that should have been in place. But we'll move on. Mr. Chair and Ms. Dugan, will you comment on the nationally normed college entrance exam? I mean, I know what you're referring to or what the bill author refers to. But compare that to our academic standards and the benchmarks, which are supposed to be career and college ready. How will those line up? Because now we're having a nationally normed college entrance exam versus the MCA3s. And I know there's going to be a cost to this, but can you explain to us what this similarity might be or contrast if necessary? Yeah, I'm on line 13.7. Clause number one, beginning with attainment of required academic standards.
Ms. Dugan.
So basically my question is, what will be looked at in a nationally normed college test that will line up with our career and college readiness standards, actually our benchmarks, because that's what the tests are based on?
Yes, ma'am, and I was trying to find...
Ms. Dugan.
On page 15, this paragraph 4, 3 and 4 talking about ensuring that, or paragraph 5, is talking about that alignment. So we will have to prove that alignment. So right now we have We have a contract with a vendor. We develop items specifically aligned to the Minnesota academic standards. Mm-hmm. We construct the test, and then we still have to prove that the test that we developed is aligned to those standards. And so we will have to go through a similar process here where the college entrance exam that's nationally normed, we will have to look at those items, go through a very rigorous alignment process, and then based on the findings of that alignment process, and I have no idea what that process will hold because those are not our items. And so depending on the result, the outcome of that alignment study, then we would need to move forward with next steps.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Just a final comment. Then this might be money that we spend that perhaps will not produce the result that is expected in this provision. I just want to make that comment on the record.
Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might be an appropriate time to invite Dr. Hynek down because we did take testimony in the several months of hearings on the assessment and accountability work group around this issue and what national companies have been doing to align to state standards, what their record is, what their process is. So I think some comment might be in order here.
Very good. Dr. Hynek, welcome.
Please introduce
yourself.
Thank you, Chairman Marquardt and fellow members of the committee. My name is Karen Hynek, and I represent the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I'm the System Director of P20 and College Readiness. And in response to the question that Senator Erickson brings forth, the question is around MCA 2 and MCA 3 in alignment with college readiness standards. As you may be aware, colleges and universities across our country use two assessments for admissions purposes. They are the ACT and the SAT. They're nationally normed. Lots of research has been done on both of those two assessments. There are very few states in the country where the public state colleges or universities use the high school assessment test. And that's really because students come from all over the country into most public state colleges and universities. There are students out of state. So when you think that each state has different tests that they use, in our case the MCAs, Wisconsin probably doesn't use the MCAs to have admissions. We don't use the MCA for admissions purposes. We don't have alignment with the MCAs for placement for college readiness. So if a student comes to a Minsku campus saying they've been proficient in the MCAs, we still require them to either have an ACT or use a college placement test called the ACCUPLACER, or in some cases it could have been the COMPASS. So the purpose of the redesign between secondary and post-secondary has really been pinpointing the benchmarks of college and career readiness so that we can help parents and students know earlier if they're ready and if they're on track for post-secondary admission, as well as for being ready so that they can begin their coursework at college level coursework. And that's the reason why we're looking at a nationally normed exam, because we do know that students across Minnesota not only come to the Minsku system, but they also go to the University of Minnesota, they go to our private colleges, and they go out of state. So we want to assure that students are using the benchmark beginning with the end in mind.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What bothers me is then that we've had the grad in place, at least in writing and reading, for several years, and has that been for naught? If they don't, I know they don't count for admittance to a college, but we've taken great pride in developing those academic standards and then the subsequent tests to ensure that our students are proficient in at least those two areas when they proceed to college. So has that all been for naught? Have we just wasted a lot of money and a lot of time and resources?
Dr. Hynek?
I'm certainly not saying that. What I am saying is that colleges and universities never use the grad exam. No one asks a student what was your score on the grad exam. It's not used in any fashion in the Minsku system, and I'm pretty sure in other private universities and the University of Minnesota would likely say the same thing. The standards are very important, and I think that's a key point that you bring up. There's been a lot of work on standards, and I think when the question sometimes comes up about the cut score and wanting a cut score for graduation, we forget that we've spent a lot of time on standards, and the reality is every day teachers across our state are assessing students. formatively and summatively on how they actually meet those standards. And that's what high school graduation is about. At the same point in time, we do know that we want to be much more transparent with students and parents about what are the benchmarks for college and career readiness. As we know, our economy needs more people to get post-secondary credentialing in order to get the types of jobs that we want to see grow in the state of Minnesota. It's important for parents and students and teachers to know what are those benchmarks. And colleges and universities do use these nationally normed exams, ACT and SAT, and have been using them for a long time.
Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson, I think you probably have heard some of this testimony already, too, but I would say what our assessment experts have said is not that all the work we've done in relation to the grad is for naught, but that we've reached a point where we're ready for something more robust, and we're ready to make that connection in a stronger way between secondary and post-secondary. The grad has really brought us to a point of higher systemic accountability. But I think what Dr. Angemeyer said is we've outgrown it. And if you want further assessment testimony around that, we do have Dr. Spacuzza with us today, but I don't know if you're interested in that or not. But that the general perspective of the assessment authorities we've been working with is we're past the value the grad has been to our system, and we need to move to a more robust system.
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, well, I hope that you read the editorial in the Grand Forks Herald that pointed out that Minnesota should not take this step, that we should look to Massachusetts, who continues to maintain this high standard with a grad exam or grad exams, and that this is your area, this is my home place, and, members, I think we need to tread very lightly when we make this huge change. When we have prided ourselves in the state of Minnesota in requiring our students to be proficient in reading and writing, and although math is in a hiatus state, we need to ask ourselves, what is it we are doing? Are we lowering our standards? With all due respect to Representative Reinert, she says we need something more robust. Well, the ACT is not more robust. What we have had in place obviously has been robust because we've gotten so many complaints about it. And I visited with my school folks over the Easter break, and they have some reservations, but they also know that they're making progress in especially the area of the grad and reading and writing. Why would that go away when we have set that high standard? So let's think carefully before we pursue this path of huge change and maybe become second class instead of first class as we have been.
Thank you. Representative Reinert.
Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate to have Dr. Spacuzza come just because he has not only the professional expertise in assessment but also the hands-on experience in the Mounds View School District at Irondale with this transition? And I think he could shed some light on the anxieties around the elimination of the grad.
Very good. Good morning. Welcome. And please introduce yourself.
Thank you very much. My name is Dr. Rick Spacuzza. I live out in Woodbury. I am currently the Deputy Superintendent of the Mounds View Public Schools, and I really appreciate the opportunity to provide some information with regards to the current question at the table. Specifically, I think one of the challenges that we've had, and I think you referenced Dr. Angermeyer with regards to the Bloomington Public Schools. In my career, I've had the opportunity to work in the Minneapolis Public Schools, the St. Paul Public Schools, South Washington County, and now Mounds View. That goes from large urban districts to suburban districts to first-rung districts. What you have is a consensus and a growing consensus on the evolutionary nature of some of the cross PK-14 conversations that are occurring in the state. But Dr. Hynek, to my right, you can see that there's conversations with regards to admitting students into post-secondary careers. Our vision, the North Star, with regards to what legislation is currently have in place, the standards that we've put in place, is an evolutionary and iterative process. We have the opportunity to provide for students a follow-up on the investment that you've already put in place. Currently, two-thirds of the ACT E-Pass system is already in place. You are funding the 8th grade explore test that examines students' proficiency in science, math, reading, and it's linked to benchmarks that are identified not just for career, but also for expectations for profit, nonprofit, business partnerships, and organizations for the types of skills that we're looking for students in the 21st century and beyond. In addition, you are funding the PLAN test with regards to a similar ability for us to look at college career benchmarks that also align and show growth for students. It allows us, with the opportunity in this bill, to provide an college entrance exam that's nationally normed and has longitudinal information with regards to the types of skills, the level of competency, the both two-year, four-year, public, private, and the career business partnership are looking for the type of outcomes for students. I know one of the biggest consternations right now is coming down to the specific piece on whether or not a cut score should be placed on a college entrance exam. And I want you just to reflect and think about your own high school experience and the people that walk through the threshold every single day. What you're giving them is the opportunity to identify their aspirations. You're giving them a golden ticket to be able to take an exam that currently 30% of our students in the state of Minnesota do not sit for. If we're really serious about moving students to college and career readiness, how can we turn our heads with regards to the rigor and the relevance of a test that allows them to move to the next level? And so one of the challenges we've had when we focused on the grad, yes, it was important. Yes, it dealt with standards. Yes, it really changed the accountability within our districts. We have stretched the rubber band with regards to how system accountability is in place, the transparency that's reported, and also because of No Child Left Behind, with your multiple measures reports, we will continue to have the context and the necessary accountability systems to report out on how students of color, how students in poverty, how our English language learning students and our special education students are performing. One of the most important things to realize is although there was an article yesterday in the Star Tribune, it misrepresented with regards to the gains that are being made. It represented gains on a proficiency measure in which it said that there was a 3x increase for students of minority students. The difficulty is that the percent of students who are white are passing the reading test at 84%. Currently, 51 and 53% are students of color. Our challenge is that we still have a huge gap with regards to equity and our performance within the public education system. The ability for us to ensure that 100% of our students would be able to sit for a college career readiness, begin early indicators of identifying where they are on the trajectory to that, and have diagnostic and early interventions to make sure that the systems are providing immediate and ongoing support, not just to get over a high school hurdle, but rather to look at the next environment. Because at the end view is just a high school diploma, we're selling our students and our community short. We have a great opportunity to raise the level of rigor. The relevance, the reason that there was a cut score on the grad test is it was not relevant to enroll in a school at a two-year school or a four-year school when I know that an SAT or ACT is the golden ticket. Then why, as a high school student, am I going to pay attention to an MCA? Our K-8 students are pretty compliant. You get into high school, they're not as compliant, and they're thinking about their next opportunity. So we put in a cut score even at the request of districts because we were being held accountable. So we asked for a cut score because we wanted the students to take a test that was misaligned with the next environment and the development. If you ask the Department of Education, they did not develop the grad test or the MCA to be a college career readiness exam. So what you have the opportunity for us to do is to add something that provides the support for all students.
Thank you very much. Representative Erickson.
Yeah, I'm questioning that last statement that that grad was not designed to be career and college ready. I've not heard that before. I thought to be in compliance with No Child Left Behind, that when we developed those standards and those benchmarks and the subsequent tests, they were career and college ready. I think that's in statute.
I think
Dr. Spaguzza?
Yeah, appreciate that. Having sat on some of the, not the recent, but sat on most of some of the standard setting and test development, at the time, although we were emerging toward a college career readiness standards, that was not at the time when the BST was replaced by the MCA and then the grad, that they were designed as specific tests to measure students' abilities for the next environment as the ACT or SAT.
Okay. Anyone else question particular for any of these testifiers? All right, Representative Quam. Then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I chaired the science writing, you know, the standards, the writing committee for the science standards back, it's about a decade ago, we did those in order to align with both students going on and students being done, so it was compatible with the students that were going to go into, you know, either trade schools or a 2 or 4 year college. And so, and also when I was been on the MCA two committees and we selected questions and criteria, it was made to cover both. Am I to understand from the testifier that that was an incorrect thing that we were being told when we were on those committees?
Dr. Spaguzza?
I can't speak specifically to what you were told, but I can share with you, as Dr. Hynek has, is that if you're applying to the University of Minnesota, if you're applying to the MinSCU system, the MCA at high school and the grad test is not part of the application process for how they're defining admission.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, honestly, I don't think that we should design our tests for any specific endpoint, because not any individual student is identical to another. And not every career path and life plan and the appropriate plan for each student is identical. So we should have a goal of having something that would cover the broad spectrum as opposed to just narrowing it down to one target, because that does a disservice for every student that isn't pursuing that target, and there might be a blind spot. So that's my opinion from, you know, being involved on very many levels in the school system.
Dr. Hynek.
Mr. Chair and fellow committee members, I wholeheartedly agree with what you just said. And the reality is that's what this bill is proposing. It's proposing the opportunity for a suite of assessments that allow students to know where they are in regards to a benchmark for college and career readiness that's accepted at a state college and university, as well as helping to provide the guidance as to if students want to go to more selective institutions, as well as what career pathways are actually requiring around readiness. In addition to that, if students aren't on track to meeting those benchmarks, it's providing a college placement diagnostic, which will help identify what the specific areas are of weakness for a student and help teachers to create the types of customized interventions that will really help them as they move forward in post-secondary. That's where the holistic conversation about helping students to plan earlier with career aspirations, figure out what is it that you're actually interested in, and what are those job opportunities and post-secondary options for you. So thank you for that comment.
Representative Radinovich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think my question might be best answered by Ms. Dugan. Thank you, Ms. Dugan. I'm in support of this bill. I think that it's time that we look at assessments that are nationally normed. I think that, you know, some of the value that we have is comparing ourselves to other states across this country to make sure that we are, you know, one of the states that provides the highest level of education. I think the question that I have is I had heard earlier today, just a little bit ago, this is the first I've had of this debate, I wasn't on the policy committee, but that 30% of Minnesota students currently don't sit for one of these tests right now. And so my question is, I know that Minnesota has a legacy of you know, traditionally scoring highest amongst states in the ACT test, and if we go forward with this and everybody tests, do we have an idea as to how that might impact our overall average score? And, you know, I suspect that by bringing in some people who, you know, probably had elected not to take the test before for, you know, one reason or another, that we may lower our overall average score. I anticipate that might be in effect. What other measures are in place to measure our progress versus other states, our aptitude versus other states?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. So the first question about what would happen to the overall state performance of the ACT, I really shouldn't speculate
right.
that. the second part about what other measures we have to compare ourselves to the other states in the nation, the National Assessment of Educational Progress, the NAEP,
okay.
which is in math, reading, and science, and then there's also a writing component, and it's in grades 4, 8, and then also grade 12. And so there, we do rank relatively well on those assessments. That said, we still have a very large achievement gap, so I don't want to play that up too much. So we participate in NAEP, and then we also participated in TIMSS and PISA. And in TIMSS, we participated as a country, and so we were able to compare Minnesota performance against that of other countries. And Massachusetts participated as a country as well in that assessment. So there are other assessments that we participate in to give us that measure of it, or that piece of information in comparison.
Thank you.
Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a question for Superintendent Huberman, if you wouldn't mind coming up here. That would be helpful. Irondale High School has been doing the ACTs now and has seen success with their students. Could you share with us how this has helped student achievement and what you're doing just briefly and how it's helping student achievement as well as how it's motivated students? And I like the concept. It's a kind of a great equalizer. The students that are in the middle sometimes are forgotten. And could you just elaborate on that a little bit, please?
We're going to go to amendments at 9:30, so you have about a minute and a half. If you would introduce yourself and just kind of give a summary of the program that we saw earlier, I know in policy, which was very good.
Dan Huberman, superintendent of the Mountain View Public Schools. If I could, Representative Bernardi, I'd like to comment on the previous question, that over the past 2 years, as we've given the ACT at our expense to all students in our system, what we have seen is that for the top quartile of kids, if you look back over historical performance, no change. If you look at the second quartile of kids, no change. Where we're really seeing a difference are the kids who were in the lower quartile and in the third quartile. Those kids, we've seen some effect on the scores because more of the students, 30% who hadn't been taking it, who are now taking it, that there has been some effect on that, some dampening effect. Basically, to your question, Representative Bernardi, you know, we give the 1 day of the year when our juniors all take the ACT is the day we have the highest attendance of our junior class throughout the entire year. They take it very seriously. The preparation we do, which is illustrated in the information that was just passed out, we establish very early on preparation for kids as early as middle school and to late elementary, explaining to them and showing their parents why the ACT and why their performance on that is important. The feedback we give individual kids from the time they're in third grade through eighth grade when they take the Explore, from the time they're in ninth and tenth grade, when we do individual planning with students and parents, gives them a very clear picture and very clear preparation for that test. We also understand that this is a complex process. It's multifaceted. We do not build our system around one test. We build it around the constellation of factors that need to be taken into account, individualizing it for kids based on social economic status, based on what it is that they may be interested in. So that whole process, again, which is illustrated in our roadmap to post-secondary success, ties into not only performance on the ACT, but are they prepared and are they going to be accepted into the post-secondary program of their interest.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Hoverman, how much do you spend providing the ACT test to the students?
It's about $40,000.
And for how many students would that be?
Approximately 800.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, one quick question here. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Superintendent Hoverman. To what extent would you attribute your successes to effective teaching?
It's a major factor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Mr. Hoverman.
Thank you. Yeah. It's a major factor, along with the fact that with high-quality teaching, it's the alignment of our system. It's making sure that there's alignment between elementary, middle school, to the high school. And that's been a significant change as we put together our pathway system over the last 3 or 4 years. That's where we're seeing a significant amount of our improvement.
Representative Hertaus has been on the list for a long, long time here. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to ask a question and kind of looking in as an outsider. You know, we're spending billions of dollars, half of our state budget, on K-12 and higher education. And it should probably be no surprise to most of us that with all that spending going on in the enterprise of education, that 20% of the legislature comes from backgrounds in education. But as a business person, hiring people and looking at people filling out applications, I kind of hear and see a conundrum here. We currently hear the rhetoric of all of the students who apparently pass ACTs and SATs get into college but are having remedial problems. Can't read, write, do arithmetic. But yet they're college ready. Why are we moving in a direction of sanctifying the ACT as being prepared to make your way in life? I mean, it seems to be a real conundrum to me. I mean, the schools seem to be falling short of teaching the basics. And I don't see where, you know, I applaud the effort to make everybody post-secondary qualified, but it's kind of saying we're just failing as K-12 and let's just ship them on to the next level and hope that they get it right. You know, it just seems really frustrating. And It just appears to me as though we're not really doing a good enough job to make sure that everyone really has the basics to succeed even without a college degree. There seems to be such an emphasis that everybody's got to go to college. And I'm not deploring the idea that more education is bad. I'm not saying that. But not everybody is a college student. And so what are we doing for making sure that our K-12 education is the best?
Superintendent Hoverman, then we're going to vote.
Representative, it's not our intention at all to say that a 2-year, 4-year college is the goal for everyone. We are building our system around making sure that kids who are interested in technical programs, interested in the trades, if they're interested in going into the military, if they're interested in going into the world of work, doesn't matter. We need to provide them the most rigorous and high-quality preparation that we can. Quite honestly, we don't feel like we are failing. We feel like within our system that we are blending the basic skills. You also see in the back of the document I passed around the habits of mind. What I hear from business leaders in our community, small, medium, larger businesses, are those habits of mind and the skills that are required there are every bit as important as the academic background. So we are taking a holistic approach to this, that we are wanting to make sure that we're not making a judgment of what kids need to go into or want to go into. We're saying wherever they need to go, wherever they want to go, that they need to have all of those skill sets in place.
Thank you, Superintendent. Thank you. Representative Mariani, you had a comment, and then we're going to go to amendments.
Just very quickly, and I think those were good questions from Representative Hertas. You know, but the fact remains that you know you've got young people passing the grad and they're not college ready. The whole point of these suite of assessments is, in fact, to plot you on a graph in terms of readiness. So one of the things that the ACT, for instance, will report is the percentage of students in any given state that are college ready, both in the aggregate as well as in you know very specific content areas. So it's the ability to have that kind of a tool and to be able to deploy it early on as part of a constant regimen from, it sounds like Arndale Middle School going forward, that allows them for much more earlier diagnostic and adjustments and interventions relative to, in fact, college readiness. So I think your questions are good questions. We should be focused on an assessment system that indicates to a student where they're at relative to either career or college readiness. And obviously, it's a little bit interchangeable. You know, we're talking about careers nowadays. It's pretty difficult to talk about professional careers, even hand-skilled careers, without thinking about some kind of post-secondary experience and application. But the point is, I'm saying too much, the point is that right now we have kids passing the grad who clearly are not college ready, and guess what? They don't know about it until it's too late. The idea here is that the young people will be on a track, their families will be on a track with them, their educators, early on so we can do the kind of diagnostic, or rather we can do the kind of interventions necessary to get them to the point of being career and college ready.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hertas, go ahead.
And I agree with that. And I think that's important. But what I was trying to say is that we have so many that are meeting that college entrance standard right now that are falling short, and they're in college. And so that's the conundrum that I was trying to present. And in addition, earlier today, we already heard that we want to waive the requirements of what it takes to become a teacher. So the teachers aren't going to meet the standard, and we'll give them waivers to have a teaching degree and be licensed, and that's going to be okay. I'm confused.
We're going to move to the amendments. And we have the A37 amendment. Representative Mariani, I believe that's yours. If you'd like to move that.
Chair, I would move the A37 amendment, and this does several things. One is it takes out the reference to the Red Lake land transfer. This was Representative Roger Erickson's bill. We've since learned that there may be some complications here that we don't want this committee or the Education Committee to go near, so we're going to back off of that. There's some language here Representative Seltzer brought me for the MTLE, having to do with the reinstatement of the temporary teacher license provisions. And this just, it's really just clarifying language. There's language here related to the Career Tech Education Task Force, having to do with being a little bit more prescriptive about who's going to participate on that, and then also some compensation issue related to that task force. There's a brief language related to charter schools where we're removing the language of multiple measurements because we think that's confusing language relative to where it exists elsewhere in statute. So it's mostly technical in nature. The real big piece is that we're backing out of the Red Lake land transfer provision.
Any comments or questions on the A37 amendment? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the A37 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. The amendment, A37 amendment, is adopted.
Thank you.
We have the A38 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I would move that amendment as well.
Representative Mariani moves the A38 amendment. Please speak to that.
Mr. Chair, this is also related to the MTLE issue. And it's just a very small change that indicates that it's the chair that will make the appointments and not the executive director of the Board of Teachers.
Any comments or questions on that one? If not, I'm going to call for the vote on the 838 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The 838 amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And the 839 amendment. Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will offer the 839 amendment with apologies to Representative Erickson. I know we adopted this in policy committee because of an interest, I think a long-standing interest Representative Erickson has had in seeing the nationally recognized Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Test available to students. However, with some further work with the department, we found out two things about this opportunity in terms of whether it could parallel a nationally normed college entrance exam. And one is there's never been any standards alignment done with this test in any other state standards, so the alignment would be a serious issue. And the other is it doesn't meet federal accountability requirements, so we couldn't use it for our federal accountability. So for it to have students choose it as opposed to the nationally normed college entrance exam would be problematic for us as a state.
Any Representative Woodard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Reinert, I guess I'm surprised by that. You know, we just had this long conversation about how we understand that college and career readiness has many different avenues to take here, that our students have different careers in mind, they have different hopes and dreams in mind, and certainly going to the armed services is a career path that many of us would like our kids to go to, and it's certainly a good place for you to start a career. And so for them to take the nationally recognized Armed Service Vocational Aptitude Test certainly seems like a reasonable approach that, you know, there are kids who want to do that as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Reinert.
Representative Woodward, I understand your intention in terms of students' interests, but I would say the approach we're taking in the assessment bill totally is open to that and could direct and guide students in a whole range of careers. The fact is this, as an assessment, as a psychometric instrument, doesn't meet the standards we've set for ourselves as a state to allow us to do the kind of diagnostics that would reflect both on the system and on career paths for the whole range of students. And that could be something that might in the future be worked out with the federal government, but it isn't currently today, so it would behoove us not to put it in statute. We might still pursue it for the future.
Representative Woodard.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Bryant, we heard testimony a little bit earlier today that by going to the ACT as our standard instead of the grad test, that it would require all kinds of realignment anyway. So it sounds like there's a massive undertaking here on realignment for the ACT. And so, you know, the argument that this isn't aligned with our current curriculum doesn't necessarily, you know, bode well for the ACT exam either.
Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, the essence of my argument wasn't that it wasn't aligned, but it has never been aligned. There's been no effort in the history of that test to do an alignment process, whereas the ACT has regularly, over a number of years, been engaged in alignment processes with states and indeed has done some preliminary work in relation to Minnesota standards. So you're in a very different testing process and mechanism. We would have to do quite a bit more research and engagement with the authors of this Armed Services Vocational Test to even comprehend what its capacity is to serve the purposes that the nationally normed college entrance exam we're undertaking will serve.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, and I'll kind of keep this brief here, but so what you're saying is that today, if we were to pass this bill and this were to sign into law, that we don't need a waiver from the NCLB to have a different grad test. I mean, replacing our grad test with the ACT test doesn't require any waiver from the federal government?
Representative Reinert.
Mr. Chair, no, I did not say that. But the federal government is currently engaged in the very discussion about nationally normed college entrance exams being serving in the role of the federal accountability, and our state is already engaged in that discussion with the federal government, and there's a history there and a record there.
Okay. Mr. Chair. And so my final comment, and I would say that, I would certainly make this part of that conversation with the federal government on the waiver process, and I would highly recommend that we not do this, and would ask for a roll call vote on this, because I think this is pretty important, and would like to see this remain within, at least this piece, remain within the bill.
Okay, roll call's been called for. Representative Briner.
Mr. Chair, just quickly, so members are aware, I don't know that we have time for this, but the department brought forward this amendment after some research, and they do not support this remaining in there simply from a psychometric best practice point of view.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the ASVAB has been the part of a lot of youth in their plan. And we have a great deal of students in the districts that I've been involved with and across the state and across the nation that take this test. And it's got millions and millions, if not tens of millions of dollars of work that's gone into it to develop it and have it. And I honestly feel that if someone in our high school decides that their career path is to serve this country and that this is a valid career path for millions of students, I think that we should continue to maintain this as a valid career path, because that's their individual choice, just as if they chose to be a doctor, a farmer, a pipe fitter, an electrician, or a carpenter. So I don't think it's our place to narrow the scope of their career choices. It should be more compatible. So I disagree with the amendment that deletes the armed services test.
Representative Briner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, this amendment in no way narrows the opportunity for any student. If we were to follow the reasoning that you're representing here, we'd have a separate test for every profession given by the professional organization. The nationally normed college entrance exam and the suite of assessment that accompanies it, as well as the tools that are designed for remediation and intervention, are designed to address every opportunity a student might choose and direct them successfully in those opportunities. And the department is here to simply give quick testimony to their
representative concerns. Reinert, might I make a suggestion? There's several people on the list. We're running out of time. This is going to be laid over, and we'll come back when the finance omnibus bill. Would you mind withdrawing this amendment at this time and we can revisit?
No, I'd be happy to. I don't think anybody wants to come back at 6 or 6:30 tonight to do this.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is not, I think there's some discussion on this, and if I would you mind doing that?
I withdraw my amendment, Mr. Chair, and I would ask also that the department might provide some elaboration on this position from their point of view as a testing instrument, why this isn't compatible with the rest of the bill.
Okay. And so I don't know. Can we do this? Yeah, let's do this at another time. And would that be all right? All right. Any other? No, I see no further amendments. Any other comments on House File 1151? Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question on the path and what's going to happen the rest of the week.
The rest of the week, tomorrow, what bills do we have? A couple bills Wednesday. On Thursday, we have House File 234 and also the early ed scholarship bill on Thursday. And then we're looking at having a report probably done by next week of some time, middle of the week, okay, of having a finance omnibus, getting things put together.
Okay, middle of the week. Okay, thank you.
Sure. So not till about the middle of next week probably. I can't remember the bills tomorrow for sure. Anyway, there's... Okay. We have some minutes. Can we do that? March 25th minutes, and I have you look them over because there were a number of roll call votes, just to make sure you were on the right side of the roll call vote if you had a chance to look that over. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did look them over, and I would like to place a motion to approve the minutes.
And were you on the right side of the vote?
I'm always on the right side of
that's
the vote.
Our, so Representative McDonald moves the March 21st, 2013 minutes. Any debate? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Those minutes are approved. And members, thank you. And so we move House File 1151 is laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, members, we are adjourned.